My role as an infectious disease physician is basically, obviously, as the term implies, we look after infections caused by various organisms. And they could be bacteria, which is the more common one we talk about, viral infections, and of course, fungal infections. Of late, of course, we also have to deal with outbreaks. The last 20 years, we have had so many novel infections, infections caused by newer organisms. Things like MERS-CoV, things like SARS, H1N1, for example. So that also comes under the purview of my work. Well, it's been given the task of being the National Center for Infectious Diseases, so most of our specialist training in that field is done at Sungai Buloh. So being the National Center, we also look at we are in the forefront of dealing with major infections. For example, HIV. We are the largest HIV treating center in the country. We have about 9,000 patients on our follow-up. But we also, as I mentioned earlier just now, at the first-line response to major outbreaks, especially if it's in the Klang Valley, and also generally for the country. For example, in Ebola, we have been designated to be the Ebola center. If there is a confirmed Ebola case in the peninsula of Malaysia, it will be in Sungai Buloh. So, our facilities are a little bit different from the general hospital. So in terms of isolation, we have special rooms built to deal with such infections. That's a good question, but I think that actually starts from, it tells us how successful antibiotics have been. If you look at the history of medicine, antibiotics was a major, major advancement for human beings. I think the rates of human mortality dropped tremendously once Alexander Fleming started the journey with antibiotics. Unfortunately, the success of antibiotics have also become one of its weaknesses. Human beings, patients and doctors alike now expect so much from antibiotics, thinking they can solve all infections. So what you said about patients going to the GPs asking for antibiotics, well, it's something we do see quite a bit of in Malaysia. Patients do expect if they have a fever, they take antibiotics, it will cure them. This was probably true in the 1940s and 50s during the World War then, because yes, antibiotics saved many lives of soldiers. Those days they died from bullets, they also died from the infection that came after that. But antibiotics did solve a lot of problems. Unfortunately, over the last 50, 60, 70 years, many of the bacteria have learned how to be resistant to many of the antibiotics we have used in the past. So that's why now we have a new problem. We are trying to preserve the antibiotics that we have. And WHO, since 2011, have made this a clarion call, you know, no cure, no action today, no cure tomorrow, because we need to preserve our antibiotics. So antibiotic resistance has now become a major concern, global concern for the medical fraternity, the world over. For many years we've been doing that, but since WHO started this program in 2015, they call it the World Antibiotic Awareness Week. So in a show of solidarity, all WHO member countries around the world would do that campaign around that time. And well, Malaysia has been doing that as well. So the Ministry of Health has pulled in the stakeholders. We have formed a National Antimicrobial Resistance Committee, which is made up of 50 over stakeholders from all walks of life, meaning from the professionals to the academicians to the industry, people who run hospitals, people who run farms and agriculture, into this big group. This committee is chaired by the Director General of Health, as well as the Director General of the Department of Veterinary Services, DVS. So with this committee, we have set up many working groups to deal with the major areas where antibiotics may be used inappropriately, which of course will lead to antibiotic resistance. So we have formed this last couple of years, and with this committee we have formed the National Strategic Plan. It always starts with a plan, so we have got the plan on paper. The question now is how well we implement it. Well, some things, let's talk of the good stuff first. Some things have changed quite a bit. I think one of the major things we have done is we have formed this, to preserve antibiotics, we have formed these groups called Antimicrobial Stewardship Program, stewards to protect the products, the antibiotics. And now we have AMS teams throughout the country in all government hospitals, major government hospitals, we have AMS teams, and we've been doing it for the last few years. And we have been able to see the use of antibiotics gradually come down over the years, at least in the government hospitals. This year, we have also focused on the private colleagues. Of course, it's a lot more difficult. The mechanisms are different in the private side because everybody is a solo practitioner as such in the private hospitals. But we have started engaging with the Association of Private Hospitals Malaysia, and we hope that they will also form AMS teams in the private hospitals. Another area we start engaging with is the general practitioners. It's a whole different ball game because literally every single clinic is run by a different person. And we are working with, therefore, with the Association, Malaysian Medical Association, for example, to try to address that. Now, that is still, I would say, fairly early. The campaign focuses on that. But in terms of structure, maybe it's moving a little bit slower compared to the government hospitals and the private hospitals. No, I have good news for you. And what you said earlier is correct. In the past, we left the GPs or the individual doctors to do what they think is best. You know, whether they went for any professional development is really left up to them. But the last few years, we now talk about what we call CPD points, continuous professional development. And you need to collect these points before you can renew your practicing certificate. Now that is in play now. So in a way, it sort of forces or encourages GPs to collect these points. And these points may be collected when we go for what we call continuous medical education programs, go for talks, conferences, etc., etc. So that's a very good step. Right? Does it mean it solves all the problems? No, but I think it's the first step. Whether in terms of antibiotic resistance, whether will they go for talks linked to antibiotics? Well, the CTP points doesn't impose that. But we hope that in the future, we can also try to make sure every GP will collect some CPD points linked to antimicrobial resistance lectures or seminars, so that at least they all know a bit more about the current situation. Absolutely. And let me say this first. What is the cost of antimicrobial resistance? The cost. And the cost, obviously, the first thing is the cost in terms of financial sense. That's cost money. In what way? Well, the utilization of, if you are infected with a resistant organism, it's clear that you will need more expensive treatments. That has been proven around the world. The new drugs we have to give will be more expensive, might even be more toxic. So you may have to often end up staying in the hospital longer. So health utilization also goes up, which of course brings costs up as well. And finally, we all know the data is very strong throughout the world. If you are infected with a resistant organism, you're more likely to die from it as well. So it's a pretty bad stuff going around. You need to stay in hospital longer, you need to pay more money, and you might still end up dying. So it's pretty bad scenario. So we really have a lot of incentive to try to reduce antimicrobial resistance, all of us, government, private sector, civil society, even the individual himself or herself. Well, that's why we're trying to work very closely with people like you in the media, because you have a lot of influence trying to get the message out there. And you're absolutely right that the major stakeholders is the individual. And of course, a bunch of individuals make up society, obviously. We know that if we misuse antibiotics or use a lot of antibiotics in an appropriate fashion, two things will happen. Number one, the resistance in that community, in that country, for that particular antibiotic will go up. And the data has been shown around the world. So in European countries where they collect a lot of good data, if you look at a country like Greece or Turkey, where the usage of antibiotics tend to be very, very high, this can be counted and measured. They also find the resistance to be equally high. Whereas you go to a country like Denmark or Netherlands, where the use of antibiotics generally is pretty low, their resistance also is equally very low. And this is good news in a sense. So we are not totally helpless. So if we can bring down our use of antibiotics, use them only appropriately, perhaps we have a chance, perhaps there's hope that we can also reduce our resistance to some degree. As resistance drops, all the things we discussed earlier will improve. Mortality drops, obviously. The cost of medicines and cost of treatment will also drop. And of course, in terms of morbidity, suffering of the patients, etc., should hopefully also decrease. So the first benefit, of course, is looking at the country or society at large. But we also have data to show that if you as an individual take an antibiotic for whatever, let's say for a sore throat, that might increase your risk of resistance for the next 1 year. So even 1 year later down the line, we may be able to find resistant organism in you. So not taking antibiotics or taking, but if you take antibiotics inappropriately, you do harm to the society, the ecology in the country in terms of AMR levels in the country, you also actually do harm to yourself. And that is also a message we want to talk to, remind doctors, if you use antibiotics inappropriately, you might also be doing harm to that individual patient. Right. Before we talk about that, I just want to add one point when you bring up the issue of pharma companies. Our advancement of antibiotics have been always driven by pharma companies. They are the ones who actually come up with newer antibiotics. And so far, up to a couple of years ago, maybe one decade ago, they've been pretty successful. When we mess up one antibiotic, a new one comes along, and then here we go again. But of late, the last 10 years, they haven't been doing so well. The pipeline of antibiotics is really drying up. The last 10, 20 years, there's hardly been any new class of antibiotics. The new antibiotics now is just a tweaking of the old antibiotic. It's like a cousin kind of thing. But there are no more new classes for a very long time. Because of this, this problem of resistance becomes much more urgent. Because last time we could depend on some newer antibiotic coming along and say, okay, now resistant to this, but I got this one. But now we can't say that. So I think many pharma companies also realize the difficulties that they have. They cannot come up with the solution fast enough. So now many of them are also playing ball as such. I would like to look at them as not just a problem, but actually more of a solution. So we do work with them as well, not in selling their drugs, obviously, in trying to help them, help all of us use the drug more efficiently. I mean, definitely, there's no question that we do need antibiotics. We save lives with antibiotics, but we need to use it appropriately. Otherwise, this thing will continue to get worse. If you look at our crystal ball, I think we need to look at it optimistically. If we say we are defeated, we are defeated. The chances that the resistance will continue to increase, that's my feeling. However, I think we can slow it down, we can curtail it. We do hope governments around the world and pharma companies will come up with newer antibiotics and better antibiotics in the years to come. We just have to hold the tide or stem the tide at the moment. To reverse all forms of resistance, that's not going to happen. That's for sure. We have a term, and it's not just in medicine, but it's actually in science, where resistance is inevitable. It's going to happen. The question is, what is the rate? How fast does it go? In the last 10, 20 years, especially for what we call gram-negative organisms, we have basically gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria. The gram-negative bacteria, which is the one who causes a lot of major infections in hospital, the resistance has really shot up tremendously around the world. Malaysia is no exception. So we hope that if we can control it, if our stewardship programs are good, we can control it or delay it or slow it down. Perhaps there will be newer antibiotics coming down in due course. There are some in the market now, but they're not yet ready for commercial use, obviously. It takes a long time before it's safe enough or good enough to be used commercially. So we're basically trying to tie or stem the tide to whatever we can. I'm not being pessimistic, but that's going to happen. But the optimistic part is this: we do have data around the world that if we control our use, reduce our use, use it only when effectively we can have a say in how fast resistance increase. The examples I've given you about certain countries, what they have done, has worked. This is unchallenged data.
In your optimism, you sound very pessimistic. So
I think that's what we have to be, a pragmatic optimism. We can still do something. And that's why we go out talking about this all the time. Ministry of Health goes around trying to push the right buttons to get things going. It's not going to be easy, for sure. All right. And this is not something just Malaysia. You go to America, you go to the UK and Australia, they face the same problems. Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. And one of the major areas of misuse of antibiotics, since we're on the topic, is when we use antibiotics to treat viral infections. Let's stick to the common stuff. The most common cause of a sore throat that many of us will see our GP or family medicine person is often due to a virus. Whichever paper you read, whether it's in a developed country or not so developed country, we're talking about 90% or so of these sore throats are due to viruses. Yet, we tend to take antibiotics for sore throats for very frequently, all right? And we have data to show that. So each time we use antibiotics for a sore throat, most times you don't need one, you are causing resistance. And in terms of usage, that is the most common reason why human beings take antibiotics throughout the world. Malaysia is no different. So the Ministry of Health is looking specifically at that. And while just now we spoke about what the government and stakeholders can do, here I think at the local level, at a community level, at the individual level, the individual patients have a say. So the last few years, the Ministry of Health have come up with a slogan that is specific for Malaysia for our World Antibiotics Week campaign, and that is Antibiotic Beluga. And we want patients and doctors to have that conversation when they think of using antibiotics. Do we really need the antibiotics? So go back to the scientific basis. For doctors, before you want to start antibiotics for a sore throat, have the exercise in your brain. What does the data say? We know 90% of the sore throats will be virus, but 10% perhaps will be bacteria. And there are some clinical clues that you can use to decide, oh, he's probably got a bacterial infection. This patient, I might use antibiotics. But for the others, when they don't have this criteria, perhaps we don't have to use antibiotics. Just give symptomatic relief and they will recover because it's due to a virus. We also want the patients themselves, when they are offered an antibiotic, to ask the doctor that question, do I need an antibiotic? All right. I mean, you said it very nicely, when there's a demand, there will be a supply. And we need to address that. So we need to address both sides of the equation about taking antibiotics for a sore throat. Number one, of course, the doctor as well. We need to continue training them, and that has been ongoing. And we are now engaging with GPs a lot as well, trying to make them understand that a lot better. We also now start working with the consumer, with the patients. And that's why it's important. We have this clause called, this slogan, Antibiotic Beluga, is to hopefully reach out to as many people as possible. Make it simple. You know, it's three words, Antibiotic Beluga. Maybe it's two words. to make people get it. Now, hopefully it's catchy enough that people would remember. But you're right. Can we get everybody in the society to understand this in a short period of time? Probably not. But I think it's important. We have to do what we can with what we have where we are. We have to start somewhere. Because basically this, what option do we have? Do we say, stay defeated, don't do anything, and let the inevitable happen? Yeah, we can do that. But it hurts all of us. And not just us, also the generation that comes after us as well. I mean, think about it. So when I was a small boy, I probably had a lot more antibiotics that my parents could get for me. And now, let's say my grandchildren, they may have, I don't have one yet, but my grandkids may have a lot less antibiotics to work with unless the pharma companies come up with some better ones or new ones later down the line. And that is kind of scary, all right? Because the drugs are more, but more of them are resistant as well. And that's pretty sad.